Hello, everybody. Today is the 28th of August, 2013, and we're working on the Blessed One's webinar commentaries. We're on commentary 11. Maybe we have a couple more to go here. We're working on these brief, terse epitomes of the meaning of the stanzas that we have been working through from the old commentary on the work of the Blessed Ones. So DK has summarized the main points of these Blessed Ones stanzas. As I say, perhaps they are not as occult as the stanzas are, but they give us something to extract from the stanzas, something that will be useful. I think here I want to, yes, we seem to be, excuse me, in the, in the right place. All right. So we are on stanza number 4, and we're looking for these brief epitomes for number 4, and I'll simply read the stanza at this point because it will help orient us when we are looking at the extracts. Ray 4. The Blessed One rushed forth to combat. He saw existence as two warring forces and fought them both. Loaded with the panoply of war, he stood midway, looking two ways. The clash of battle, the many weapons he had learned to use, the longing not to fight, the thrill of finding those he fought were but brothers and himself, the anguish of defeat, the paean of his victory, these held him down. The Blessed One paused and questioned, whence come the victory and whence defeat? Am I not the Blessed One himself? I will invoke the angels to my aid. The trumpet sound went forth, rise up and fight, and reconcile the armies of the Lord. There is no battle. Force the conflict to subside. Send for the invocation for the peace of all. Form out of two one army of the Lord. Let victory crown the efforts of the Blessed One by harmonizing all. Peace lies behind the warring energies. So let us see what we have as DK describes what he would extract from this section of the old commentary in order to make it as clear as possible. Well, in the lower worlds and before the reorientation has come about and before the, I'll call it the monad in incarnation, it's oftentimes called the soul in incarnation, but I think it's even more true to call it the monad in incarnation, we have confused combat. And the idea here is he rushed forth to combat. He saw existence as two warring forces and fought them both. So, you know, let's see, who is the enemy? I fight both sides. See, there's one side within me that fights against a lower side, and the lower side fights against the higher side. And so it's oftentimes difficult. The love of fighting is so great that it's sometimes difficult to know whom you are fighting. So the principles are not clear. And the sometimes when on the field of battle you might kill your own man. That can happen. I'm sure it's happened many times. They call it friendly fire. So there has to be clarity in the battle, and there isn't at first. The realization of that which is high and that which is low. So here we're talking about the pairs of opposites of a vertical kind. So we understand that there is a higher power pulling upon us and a lower power trying to lower our vibration. And we realize that we are caught between these higher and lower pulls. That is a natural enough state. The darkness which precedes form expression. That's an interesting idea. So let's see if I can, whoop, okay. I'll do this correctly, if I possibly can. Right. I suppose before any form of expression, just think of birth, there is a darkness for the one about to be born into the world. Maybe this is part of the creative process as well. But there seems to be a condition of confinement, ignorance, containment, non-vision before form expression. We should also have, in a way, the light which precedes form expression. But and we can have as well the darkness that precedes the expression of a greater kind. Anyway, we'll leave it at that. There is an analogy here in the birth process. The veiling of the intuition, and we might say, so great is the combat and the trouble and the friction that reception of the intuition is deflected. The sensing of inharmony, and that's easily done for the fourth ray type, and cooperation with the part and not the whole, and this is a great liability. So we make a peace with one small part of the whole and leave the whole in a state of conflict. So sometimes there's peace at any price, even with one's enemies, an inglorious compromise of principle. And we don't get the whole picture. We don't stand in the center and look at the wholeness of things. Rather, we make separate peace. Or say, making separate. I don't know if there's such a word as pieces. Making separate peace, let's just call it that, with different groups, but not tending to the harmony of the whole. And maybe I'll capitalize that. Sometimes the Tibetan has some very different perspectives here, and he has surprising sentences, at least in my view. Identification with humanity, the fourth creative hierarchy, and what this means is lack of identification with the fifth kingdom of nature, and lack of identification with the fifth creative hierarchy of solar angels. So identification with the elemental nature of humanity. And we see a lot of this today where we don't think that humanity is anything more than a an advanced animal who lives but once and has no particular spiritual nature. It's a materialistic view, and therefore we cannot be rightly oriented by the values which come forth from the egoic lotus and via the solar angels and in general through the fifth kingdom of nature. Undue recognition of that which is produced by speech, and we might say, and reactivity as a result, you know. Did you hear what he said, you know? And this is a Mercurian response, and much Mars in it for reactivity. So the second ray statement is something like this. Second ray wiser statement. And DK has quoted this. They say, what do they say? Let them say. And that shows a condition of non-reactivity and being more interested in what is behind the words than the words themselves and what is the motive. So approaching, instead of with through reaction, approaching with understanding. Okay. So the fourth ray oftentimes has much to learn about mature response from the second ray type. Abnormal sensitivity to that which is the not self. Reacting, we can say, let's make sure that we get that back. Reacting to the environment and not centering oneself within the soul and incarnation, the central observing factor. In other words, always being off balance and not learning yet to stand in the center. That's one of the major things that the fourth ray type must learn: stand in the center with steadfastness and realize eventually that the two are one. This we can well understand. Constant friction and collision of values and energies and forces, always cross currents or crossing swords, we might say. So the crisis means that there is so much so much friction that resolution is needed. We are in an untenable situation which cannot be sustained. So the fourth ray life, I'm sure, we realize that we are in constant points of crisis, and sometimes DK tells us that we should generate our own crises if we don't have them, but that would be for spiritual purposes, by forcing the spiritual issue and not simply getting involved in trouble, we might say, you know. A real spiritual crisis is far more than what we call personality trouble or hot water or, you know, a difficult situation which cannot be sustained and which needs resolution. So all of the ups and downs, all of the clashes and difficulties are multiplied in the life of the one who is on the fourth ray until a point of balance and understanding is achieved. But at this point in the pilgrimage, there is no real orientation. And the monad who has rushed forth into combat and even standing behind the soul, we might say, and behind the soul ray and behind the soul in incarnation, pushes for this towards an attitude of contention. So a constant attitude of contention. And seeing either and only enemies or friends, for me or against me. But what can this lead to? Well, unity and harmony. So, well, okay, I'll look at that in just a moment. Unity and harmony, this is the higher part of the fourth ray and is achieved after much uncomfortable friction and unsustainable circumstances and pain. And instead of the veiling of the intuition through excessive reactivity, reactivity, there is the reception of the intuition through harmonious attunement and the ability to read symbols. The fourth ray type of mind and the fourth ray in general loves to analogize and symbolize and to use the similes and metaphors to put one thing in terms of something else, to describe a certain object in terms of another object, or a certain situation in terms of another situation. So always making links then between things that are like the situation of the object before one's eyes. And this ability and the imagination leads to the evocation of the intuition. So harmony, imagination, and the sensing of likeness leads to the evocation of the intuition. And, you know, there's a non-cogitative attitude which can be achieved as you stand in the center and simply wait to receive instead of frictionally thinking and rethinking and rethinking about something. Having done all to stand, that's one of the great fourth-ray mottos, having done all to stand. So after this frictional process of back and forth and attempting to evaluate a situation, one simply remains open and attuned to the descent of a higher pattern which carries the solution. What else? What else? Right judgment and pure reason. So we can say seeing things from both points of view and the merits and the relative, let's say, merits of each point of view. And pure reason is attunement with the Buddhic plane. So we see the proper relationship between things. Right. So this means access to the Buddhic plane, the plane of pure, oh, pure reason. I'll just say it. Not worry about that. The plane of inclusive reason. So, not a hasty judgment, but an evaluation, seeing the relative merits of all contending sides when a decision must be made. So I'm remembering that Mary Bailey, who had a fourth-ray mind, used to talk about the fourth ray as the judicial ray, able to see the relative merits and weigh them. Of course, it seems very much like Libra in a sense. You kind of wonder whether the constellation Libra doesn't have, the lord of that constellation doesn't have some fourth ray in its makeup, even though we are emphasizing, when we think of it, the constellationally transmitted third ray. And pure reason, you know, it's really seeing the harmonious interrelationship between things from the Buddhic perspective. The wisdom which works through the angel of the presence, and there is a kind of magnetic control to all this, the law of magnetic control, and this is the ability to attune with the angel, so to attune with the angel of the presence as the, what can we call it, divine intermediary. The supervising one at the midway, at the, my computer's jumping around a bit. The supervising one at the midway point between personality and monad. So there is here the ability to access the angel through the intuition, which is above the working with an aspect of mind above that of the concrete mind, and connection with the soul mind, well, what can we call it? Soul mind, the son of mind, that spark of mind, so son of mind, which is ruled in one sense by Mercury, the fourth ray planet, from the perspective of soul, from the soul soul purpose from the soul perspective. So the concrete mind will never really penetrate to the angel of the presence, but using the antikarana, either to the soul or the triad. The fourth ray rules all bridges, connections, as between the mental unit and the monastic permanent atom, and as between the personality as a whole and the triad as a whole, the lower triangle and the higher triangle. So the Buddhic wisdom of the spiritual triad and of the bridging angel. There are, as it were, access to all bridges. And the angel and the solar angel or angel of the presence is bridging entity. And, let's take a look at these. Let's take a look at the contrasts just for a moment. And we'll go down here just a ways to do that. And here are all the qualities. There's not so many qualities, is that correct? Not so many qualities listed on the reorientation side of the equation. Confused combat versus unity and harmony, the veiling of the intuition versus the evocation of the intuition, cooperation with the part and not the whole, so this is right judgment based upon an unbiased point of view. There are not such pairs found here as previously were the case. We have actually 4, 6, 9, nine negative qualities versus only 4 of the higher qualities. Interestingly enough, the numbers 9 and 4 relate very much to the human creative hierarchy. The numbers are there 9 and 4. We see, you know, a kind of constant turmoil in the and reactivity in the negative qualities of the monad who has rushed forth into combat and who has not reoriented itself, not made the turn, not repented, you know, turning back, versus a unifying, harmonious, intuitive, correctly judging wisdom. Taking advantage of the presence of the angel, or the angel of the presence, and therefore understanding from a higher perspective how the art of living can be effectively expressed. So, after having undergone such terrible crises, a condition of peace supervenes, and we can hope that that is going to be the case for humanity as well. It's a warring kingdom, and we see that all the time. And out of these wars come temporary demonstration for a time of peace, and we hope that there will supervene a true and lasting peace based upon right judgment, pure reason, true wisdom and inspiration by that overshadowing, supervising deity, the solar angel. And then DK goes on and attempts to correct a misconception here. Interesting what he says. I could here point out a constant misconception on the part of esotericists. The fourth ray of harmony, beauty, and art is not the ray per se of the creative artist, though he seems to be implying that it is involved in creative art. It promotes, I think, the likelihood of artistic expression. And that has something to do with, especially with the fourth ray mind. The creative artist is found equally on all the rays, and we have to ask, in what vehicles? In what vehicles? The personality, the soul, and what about the mental ray, without exception? So if we take that as a direct statement and take it at face value, we can wonder, will the fourth ray be involved at all in the expression of creative art? But, you know, as he describes it, you know, the ray that loves color, that loves music, and as we go to, let us say, Letters on Occult Meditation, I think he's trying to correct an imbalance, that if you have fourth ray, you're necessarily, you know, a creative artist. But here is something having to do with the egoic ray of harmony, the attributive ray of harmony. The fourth ray will, the method of destroying the causal body will be along the line of the inner realization of beauty and harmony. Of course, that is very much what the artist attempts to express. It causes the shattering of the causal body by the knowledge of sound and color, and the shattering effect of sound. It is the process that leads to the realization of the notes and tones of the solar system, the note and tone of individuals, and the endeavor to harmonize the egoic note with that of others. When the egoic note is sounded in harmony with other egos, the result is the shattering of the causal body. And we can wonder if these are already liberated egos with whom it is, in relation to whom this egoic note is sounded. Dissociation from the lower and the attainment of perfection. Its exponents develop along the line of music, rhythm, and painting. They withdraw in order to comprehend the life side of form. The outer manifestation of the life side in the world is through that which we call art. And some of the great painters and superlative musicians are in many cases reaching their goal in this way. So do we have a contradiction here, or can we say that there is a way in which the presence of the fourth ray can aid in artistic expression, just like the presence of the fifth ray seems to mute the quality of artistic expression? Though the forms may be technically correct, as we are told. So the creative artist is found equally on all rays, without exception. But there is something here, and we check out page 17, and we'll say, but, check, L-O-M, page 17, page 17. There's another reference that might be interesting, and it has to do with Little Lord Fight. This has to do with the fourth ray elemental of the mind. The Lord of Will took being, his dim reflection followed in his steps. The Little Lord of Force Monastic appeared on earth. The Lord who sought for harmony took form. The Little Lord who loved to fight for what he sought followed with swiftness in his wake. And that is the Lord of the fourth ray mind. And if we go here to Esoteric Psychology, page, let's say approximately 206, something like that. There it is. The ray of struggle. And let's see what else it might say here. He doesn't mention artistry in terms of the vices or virtues to be acquired, nor of the special virtues. But let's just see. It is the ray of the dashing cavalry leader, reckless of risks to himself or his followers. I wonder if George Custer was on that ray. It is the ray of the man who will lead a forlorn hope, For in moments of excitement, he is entirely dominated by Rogers, of the wild speculator and gambler, full of enthusiastic plans. And here it is. It is preeminently the ray of color of the artist whose color is always great, though his drawings will often be defective. Watts was fourth and second rays. The fourth ray man loves color and can generally produce it if untrained as an artist, and he seems to show the likelihood of that being possible. A color sense is sure to appear in other ways, in choice of dress or decoration. And those are artistic tendencies as well. Here we have as well in music, the fourth ray compositions are always full of melody, and the fourth ray man loves a tune. As a writer or a poet, his work will be often brilliant and full of picturesque word painting, but inaccurate, full of exaggeration, often pessimistic. So he applies it to various fields, and here when he goes to the fifth ray, the artist on this ray is very rare, see? So if he says they're found equally on all the rays, what type of ray rulership will the fifth ray have in the individual to make the appearance of the artist in such a type rare? And his coloring will be dull, his sculptures lifeless, and his music, if he composes, uninteresting, though technically correct in form. So there's not much encouragement there, is there? When we look for the sixth ray, he talks about a poet of the emotions, and a writer of religious books, either in poetry or prose. He is devoted to beauty and color, but his and all things lovely, but his productive skill is not great unless under the influence of one of the practically artistic rays, the fourth or the seventh. So do we have a contradiction here, or an apparent contradiction, when he tells us that this fourth ray is not per se the ray of the artist, but the creative artist is found equally on all the rays? So we also have to look here at page 210, when he talks about the practically artistic rays, the fourth and the second. Yet, the practically artistic rays are the fourth and the seventh. So it seems that the fourth ray does indeed have a connection with art and with the expression of harmony or anguish through art, but we have to be wary about thinking that every fourth ray type must necessarily be an artist. This ray is the ray of intuition and of the harmonizing of all that has been achieved through the activity of form life. You know, we have here the ending of dissonance and the ability to detect it, the better to end it, as later synthesized and absorbed by the solar angel. So the maybe even the beauty of the colors within the causal body are subjected to some degree of harmonization, so all that has been gathered or garnered in the lower life can be harmoniously related to each other. And because it's a colorful demonstration, this causal body, this egoic lotus, and yet there can be frictions with the kinds of qualities that have been gathered and garnered, and maybe the fourth ray here has the task of, through the intuition, harmonizing all of these acquisitions. It manifests eventually as all that can be evoked and evolved through the power of the one life, the monad, working through form expression. So later synthesized and absorbed by the solar angel. It manifests eventually as all that can be evoked and evolved through the power of the one life, the monad, working through form expression. You know, we have here it's harmonizing, relating, bridging qualities. The monad harmoniously expressing through form. It is the point of meeting for all the energies flowing from the higher spiritual triad and the lower triplicity, and so it must harmonize and synthesize these energies. This ray must harmonize and synthesize these higher and lower energies. So it's not enough to simply be aware of what is high and what is low and to fight with them both. One must see the value of both and find the way to mix and blend. Find the way to mix and blend the two so that dissonance between the high and low is overcome. Okay. Dissonance. Right. Well, okay, I think let's read the stanza one more time. I think is always be on the outlook, you know, when the fourth ray type is there, some form of expression is needed in order to release the tension which is built up through constant friction and crisis. And there are antisocial ways of doing this, but there are also there are ways of ugliness to do this, because I suppose the fourth ray type under the conflict side can be produce great ugliness if the dissonance is allowed to last. And there are beautiful ways of doing this, and sometimes we call those beautiful ways artistic expression. So one more time, we'll just read the okay, let's see, what can we do here? Yeah. Oh, I'm in the wrong place, am I not? Huh? Here is where I need to be. The Blessed One rushed forth to combat. He saw existence as two warring forces and fought them both. Loaded with the panoply of war, he stood midway, looking two ways. The clash of battle, the many weapons he had learned to use, the longing not to fight, the thrill of finding those he fought were but brothers and himself, the anguish of defeat, the pain of his victory, these held him down. The Blessed One paused and questioned, "Whence come the victory and whence defeat? Am I not the Blessed One himself? I will invoke the angels to my aid." We see that connection there with the solar angels that has been spoken of elsewhere. The wisdom of the solar angels. The trumpet's sound went forth, "Rise up and fight and reconcile the armies of the Lord. There is no battle. Force the conflict to subside. Send for the invocation for the peace of all. Form out of two, one army of the Lord. Let victory crown the efforts of the Blessed One by harmonizing all. Peace lies behind the warring energies." And this is the ray of humanity. We cannot help but be on it simply by being a human being and by being a member of the fifth grade of hierarchy. Fourth grade of hierarchy. We're not yet a member of the fifth. All right, let's look at the fifth ray here, and the fifth ray monad working through the soul of whatever type. Ray 5, the Blessed One came forth in ignorance. He wandered in a darkness deep of spirit. He saw no reason for this way of life. He sought among the many threads that weave the outer garment of the Lord, and found the many ways there be leading to the center of the web eternal. But of course he can't reach that center. That's the point. The forms that weave that web hide the divine reality. He lost himself. Fear entered in. He asked himself, "Another pattern must be woven, another garment formed. What shall I do? Shew me another way to weave." The word for him came forth in triple form. His mind responded to the vision clear evoked. The truth lies hidden in the unknown way. The angel of the presence guards that way. The mind reveals the angel and the door. Stand in that presence. Lift up thine eyes. Enter through that golden door. Thus will the angel, who is the shadow of the Blessed One, reveal the open door. That angel too must disappear. The Blessed One remains and passes through that door into the light sublime. I think some of the major understanding about what a Blessed One really is appears in this particular section of the old commentary, this particular stanza. It's interesting, the angel of the presence from one point of view can be considered the solar angel, but from another point of view it is as much of the solar angel as has come into the egoic lotus and is now the shadow of the true Blessed One on the higher planes, or the true monad. The angel who is the shadow of the elevated Blessed One who does not go forth into incarnation into the five lower worlds. So sometimes we see the angel of the presence acting as the kind of a guardian of the gate of paradise, and this has to do with his function as solar angel. At other times we see that angel as being the angel part of man, which has been created by the combination of monadic power supported by angelic presence, not by the entirety of the angel, the entirety of its consciousness, because it has other things to do as well, but by a portion of it. So whereas the solar angel is the returning Nirvani from the previous Mahamanvantara, the angel of the presence is sometimes considered as that solar angel, but at other times considered to be the egoic lotus, which is substanded by the solar angel, and which is the vehicle or shadow of the monad, and in which monadic qualities are invested, and which in a way protects, just because of its being, its nature as the disk of golden light, which protects the man from entering prematurely into the presence. So what do we have as we look for, well, the energy of ignorance? And we even see this, a version of this is stubborn skepticism. Skepticism in the face of incontrovertible facts. So it's almost like a willful ignorance or ignoring of certain truths which are not materially based. Criticism, well, yes, along with that of the third ray. Of the third ray, it says, critical, analytical, selfish, prideful, full of self-interest. That's certainly critical. But of the fifth ray type, it says the power to rationalize and thus destroy. And also, it's been said of this type, harsh criticism of all that does not correlate with what is known, however limited that knowing may be. So if you are offering spiritual explanations of physical phenomena, you can be ready in the presence of the fifth ray type, who will willfully ignore certain evidence. Later he becomes partial. You can be ready for harsh criticism. So the willful ignorance or ignoring of deeper non-material truths. The power to rationalize and destroy. If you take a thing apart, you kill its integrity. So if you take a thing entirely apart through analysis, you destroy it. And it's possible, we know that there are some beautiful combinations of expression and behavior. When they are overly analyzed, they lose their magic. They lose what it is they're really expressing. So the desire to take things apart through analysis is without necessarily searching for the light, is a destructive urge. So we might call this the over-analysis, leading to the destruction of the cohesion and integrity of whatever is analyzed. So in other words, there is analysis with the will to destroy and analysis with the will to understand. They're very different. So analysis for the sake of understanding is different from analysis for the sake of criticism and destruction. Mental separation. Sometimes we know that it's possible for the lower mental plane to form, we're told, a sphere of its own, a kind of 13th sphere, the worst disaster that can befall a human being, we're told, because then there is the failure to join the solar angels and to join the triadal lives in sacrificial love. So this, the concrete mind is the arena of this separation. The concrete mind is the field in which this separation occurs. Desire for knowledge, nothing wrong with that, but it's usually material knowledge at first. Later it can be quite different. I mean, I think both Annie Besant and C.W. Leadbeater, working in their various researches, were possessed of the fifth ray mind, so it seems. Certainly Besant, and I think Leadbeater too. He's very concrete in his description of what he sees. He really deals with the senses, the subtle senses, all the time, and the kind of exactitude of description in what is revealed to him through those senses. So knowledge is power, and on the basis of knowledge, because of the power of the knowledge arrived at, it is applied for the sake of growing power in the material worlds. So again, there's nothing wrong with material activity, but is it motivated by ignorance or by some sort of willful ignorance of true causes? With the fifth ray type, there can be what I would call willful ignorance of true causes. The fifth ray searches for causes, but not always. And, you know, there's a certain fear that the paradigm that one embraces and which one considers totally rational and explanatory, reasonable, will somehow be compromised, and the foundations of the reasoning in which one has so much invested oneself will be taken away. And then where one will one be? Well, you know, it is said, he lost himself. Fear entered in. So if you, for the fifth ray type, if you let go of the thread of logical reasoning according to the premises you use, which may not be adequate, there is always a danger of becoming lost. So this type fears letting go of the thread of rational analysis according to its own premises, right or wrong. Well, you know, it's a question of paradigms. The fifth ray type works hard to create a paradigm which is explanatory, which makes sense, which is not illogical, which is characterized by a rigorous reasoning. And then if you come along and introduce new assumptions, new axioms, new potential truths, this can disorganize everything they work so hard to create. It destroys their perception of the world, and they'll fight against it very hard to make sure that what you present as a reasonable premise is full of holes, is unwarranted, is irrational, and so forth. So you can expect the attack, a very focal attack of the concrete mind, which is rejecting what you propose. Then, of course, detailed analysis. And I say, I suppose we can say that in form, at least, the most detailed analysis. Intense materialism and the temporary negation of deity. And what we have here is the idea that the garment of God is all there is, and there is no God behind it. So really they are interested only in the mysteries and not the mystery behind the mysteries. The garment of God entirely fascinates them, amazes them, and therefore they are brought into the maze from which they cannot escape simply by the powers of the concrete mind. Intensification of the power to isolate. Well, this can be good or bad, because in order to concentrate, one has to isolate. At least I have found that to be the case. One thinks about isolation and looking at one thing only, and maybe not even in its relations to other things, but considering the unit as separate. Considering every unit as separate and zeroing in on that unit alone. Oh, how about that? Okay. So I think, you know, sometimes this question of concentration through Leo, through the fifth ray, I want to think only of this, and not of that, and not of that, and not of that. It has the rejective methods of the first ray, of the neti procedure, not this, not that, only on this. But the question is, if we isolate something excessively, will its relations be seen? And maybe not. The implications of wrong emphasis. Well, so much concentration on certain facts that others are ignored, we could say. So much concentration on certain facts that others are ignored. The implications of wrong emphasis. Then there is the distorted views of truth, again, that come from fragmentation. These come from a fragmented point of view. Come from a fragmented point of view. Let's just say that the overly concentrated and materialistic fifth ray approach will not see the whole, and thus the truths gathered will be partial. And mental devotion to form and form activity, a kind of an adherence to form and form activity. Mental devotion, interestingly enough, we could almost call it, you know, mental fixation upon form and form activity. And theology, when combined with the sixth ray, and making God completely rational and reasoning to the premise and from the premise. We can call it both the inductive approach, which is very much connected with the fifth Ray, but also the rigorous deductive approach, especially when the third ray and the fifth are combined in a sixth ray field. You kind of need the sixth ray there. When you put all of those rays together, 3, 5, and 6, you can get quite a strongly theological approach, but then the mind is rigid, set, inflexible. There is a, in the law of repulse, narrow and set. It speaks of the mind of this type, with a mind narrow and set, one-pointed and not inclusive. That is the theological mind. And I think I can find that here. I think it's interesting. Narrow, set, inclusive, not. Okay, let's see what we have here. Okay, so this is it's actually the integration formula for the sixth ray. The love of truth must always be desire and aspiration, reaching out for that which is material or soaring upward towards the vision of reality, must ever find their satisfaction. For this men work, driving themselves and irking others. And here comes the point. They love the truth as they interpret it. They love the vision and the dream, forgetting that the truth is limited by mind, narrow and set, one-pointed, not inclusive. And then, you know, the vision touches, but the outer fringe of mystery unveils and hides reality. So this is often the theological mind, and it's this is the integration formula for the sixth ray, page 372, and we can put this in here like this. Ray, Esoteric Psychology 2, 372. Forgetting that the truth is limited by mind, so that's the theological mind, and that the truth of deity is certainly limited by the type of concrete mind. If you want to see the theological mind, you can go to consult the theology of John Calvin and all of the abuses that that led to, with him becoming, in the eyes of many, the Pope of Geneva. You might be able to get into Geneva, maybe, but sometimes you couldn't get out. So there was a trap there. One was caught in his rigorous, exacting, though limiting, theology. I sometimes feel as if I was trapped there, but okay, you know, maybe yes, maybe no. And this can lead to something better, presumably, leading to knowledge of reality and not just of form. The realization of the soul and its potentials, so the true scientific esoteric psychology. The ability to penetrate into the disk of golden light. Ability to penetrate into the disk of golden light, which is the egoic lotus. There's a big resonance with the number 5 and the egoic lotus on the fifth plane. And even at first on the fifth from below subplane of that mental plane. Power to recognize and contact the angel of the presence, which is an angel, angel ruled generically by both the fifth and second rays. Power to recognize and contact the higher light on the higher mental plane, to contact this sphere of golden light, the great suprarational presence. We have but to read some of the Ray Lord names of the fifth ray, and we'll see how far beyond the concrete mind such an energy really is, how beautiful it really is. Sensitivity to deity, to light, and to wisdom. We'll call it kind of an upward sensitivity. It's sensitivity to the mental plane and to the higher mental plane and to light in general, as this is the most luminous of all the Raylords. Okay, Raylords. Spiritual and mental devotion. This is, is this connected with the sixth ray, or can this happen without the sixth ray? But let's say adherence to the light of mind and spirit. You know, we can call it devotion devotion to the light, and adherence to the light, and gravitation to the light, and fixation upon the light. So wherever there is light, this ray goes, and the power to take initiation, real initiation, and why should that be? Real initiation on the higher mental plane, which is numerically correlated with the number 5, and also a connection to the true first initiation, which is the transfiguration, ruled by the fifth ray. So this is the connection with the great light, sublime, revealed at this initiation. So, you know, when Sanat Kumara gets into the picture and bestows upon the worthy initiate the third degree, there is an intensity of mental light which the fifth ray type can detect, and to which it is sensitive. We have the power of Venus of the fifth ray and Vulcan having much to do with the scientific attitude in relation to the mineral kingdom, a great display of light in Vulcan. I've wondered about its fifth or seventh ray on some lower level, even though it has the first ray and some soft line rays above. So let's just take a look at the qualities as they are shown here, and see if we can see them all together, and see if there are any parallelisms here. Well, the energy of ignorance versus the knowledge of reality. So instead of excluding all that can be considered the subtle and the real, the true unbiased fifth ray type now includes it. Criticism is not paralleled. The power to rationalize and destroy is not paralleled. Instead of mental separation, we get the realization of the inclusive soul and its potentialities. Let's see. Do we have any? We have a fewer number of the positives here than the negatives. Actually, quite a number of negatives. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, even more of the negatives before reorientation than listed with the fourth ray. But anyway, the materialistic attitude is overcome, and there is an understanding, a larger understanding. Think of the vast kind of understanding, even if on the basically material plane, of the astrophysicist and the astronomer that looks out into the vast universe. The fifth ray type has given us a tremendous sense of at least external vastness, and this from a ray that can concentrate on so tiny a thing as to exclude all other factors from its perception. So both the very great and the very small are often the attention of the fifth ray type, that which lies beyond ordinary perception. So anyway, eventually we're going to have a real sensitivity to the light of the higher worlds rather than an excluding of that kind of light because of a fixation upon the leftovers of the previous solar system, the worlds of the dense physical body of the solar or planetary logos. And instead of just reasoning about God, you know, in a limited, fixed, and narrow way through theology, we actually have the power to take initiation and to attune and to and receive the higher light and in great intensity as well. So I will, let's see. Yeah, well, the angel of the presence is certainly considered just as it is absolutely dismissed by the super hyper rational materialist. All of these things are considered to be figments of the imagination, and one becomes so, I will say, so actualistic, like what's in front of your face, that one cannot be realistic about what truly exists. So just finishing this and then calling this little program to a close, the Blessed One came forth in ignorance. He wandered in the darkness deep of spirit. He saw no reason for this way of life. He sought among the many threads that weave the outer garment of the Lord, and found the many ways there be leading to the center of the web eternal. The forms that weave that web hide the divine reality. He lost himself, fear entered in. So to his ignorant way of understanding, the divine reality is always hidden while he's in the materialistic state of mind. He asked himself, at last consulting within, another pattern must be woven, another garment formed. What shall I do? Show me another way to weave, to think and to create so that the reality is not hidden. The word of the soul or of the higher sources came forth for him in triple form, the triple mind. His mind responded to the vision clear evoked. So we have both the fifth and the sixth ray combining here, the sixth and second ray of the vision and the fifth ray of mind. The truth lies hidden in the unknown way. The angel of the presence guards that way. The mind reveals the angel and the door through the golden disc, we might say. Stand in the presence, lift up thine eyes, enter through that golden door. Of course, you can stand in the presence and lift up your eyes to the presence once you've really entered that golden door. Thus will the angel, who is the shadow of the Blessed One, reveal the open door. That part of the solar angel which is within the egoic lotus reveals the open door. But from another point of view, the solar angel can reveal that door as well as it continues to tutor the homecoming monad. That angel too must disappear. They both disappear. The egoic lotus and the angel of the presence and the solar angel both disappear. The three, in a way, the solar angel, the angel of the presence, and the egoic lotus all disappear. The Blessed One, the true returning monad, remains and passes through that door into the light sublime. Okay, friends, that will be all for this one. There's so much more to say, of course. I see I'm having being blinded by the light here. Okay, I have the luminous beard. All right, that will be it for the moment. And we will continue and finish up with the epitomes, the extractions, the terse and pithy phrases or descriptors that DK extracted for rays 6 and 7. So, matter of fact, I better do the right thing here and say that this is the end of Blessed One's webinar commentaries number 11, page, well, that was a page, page 42. All this from Esoteric Psychology 2. And the beginning of Blessed One's webinar commentary number 12, page 42, from Esoteric Psychology 2. Okay, we'll see you shortly. Take care. Bye-bye.